It is the day after Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement. We're about to come into the Feast of Tabernacles. There's going to be the last of the blood moons. This is God trying to speak to us.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I am live in Nashville, Tennessee. At the conference, massive conference, the American Association of Christian Counselors. It is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday here on the Line of Fire. The number to call, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Any Jewish-related question you have of any kind, Hebrew question, question about Israel. I'm translating the book of Job now, verse by verse, just about to finish the 10th chapter, hopefully later today as part of my Job commentary. If you've got Job-related questions, I'll joyfully take those. But any Jewish-related question, Israel question, Middle East, even some relating to Islam, we can help you with. As always, on Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, 866-348-7884. I have a prayer request for you that ties in with Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, and as you're part of my radio family, it is from the heart, it is personal, but it is absolutely related to Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. I was looking at a video clip last night, and somehow, when it ended, this particular video clip, another clip came on. You know, here's the next one to look at. And it was several thousand ultra-Orthodox Jews praying before Yom Kippur. And it's a typical ultra-Orthodox prayer service. Everybody either praying by memory or out of their prayer books. They're rocking back and forth as they pray. Every so often you'll hear the leader chanting a prayer in the front or something like that. It's very moving to watch. I mean, their focus, the intensity of the dedication, of the crying out. I've written about this and said, so near and yet so far. So near and yet so far. I don't mean that in an offensive way, but obviously believing that faith in Yeshua, the Messiah, is essential for a right connection with God and true forgiveness of sins and salvation. And yet, the sincerity, the devotion, the desire to please God, the desire to receive forgiveness, it's very intense. The way many of them live puts believers, Christian believers, to shame in terms of devotion and dedication. And as I was watching, I was just moved and stirred. And in a moment like that, I want to give my entire life, every breath, to reaching my Jewish people with the message of the Messiah, in particular, religious Jews. I'm always involved with it. Of course, I've written on this so extensively. We have once a week Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. We are working with folks in Israel and in other parts of the world to help get materials out to reach Jewish people with the gospel. We have our Real Messiah website that does that. But I just desire to give more of my time and energy to Jewish outreach and to helping train and equip others. So would you just pray with me? All I want is God's will. All I want is the Father's will. I don't have an agenda. If God said to me, your calling is to get in the room and pray the rest of your life and nobody knows your name, Father, if that pleases you, it's my honor. If God's word to me was you were to move to Israel and just street preach until you can't preach anymore, whatever pleases the Father pleases me. That's my heart. That's what I want it to be. But believe God with me, will you? That the Lord will allow us to expand our Jewish outreach work, that the Lord will provide what we need to do, that He knows what we need, that He'll provide what we need, who we need to help us do that, and that He'll give me direction in my own personal life in terms of my praying, in terms of my studying, in terms of my writing, in terms of my activity. My heart burns to see the gospel go to the nations, so we're constantly training, teaching, raising people up, sending them out. God willing, next month I'll be in Hungary, the month after that in India, once again for our annual trip there. Of course, my heart burns to see the church awake in America and to see a gospel-based moral and cultural revolution. So our radio broadcast, our writing, we're doing these things day and night. But somehow, got to give myself more to Jewish ministry. Pray with me for that, would you? God is faithful. There's a massive harvest coming. I got some really interesting things to share with you. 866-34-TRUTH.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I just posted on Facebook a moment ago this picture of this little waterfall here at the amazing Gaylord Hotel. How many hotels have a waterfall inside, among many, many other things? You want to get a good workout, just walk around the hotel here and you'll get yourself a good workout. So I just posted on our Facebook page, Ask Dr. Brown, A-S-K-D-R Brown on Facebook. I just posted a picture of the waterfall because it's almost like a sound machine kind of sound behind us. This quiet that you may hear. So it's not that you got your window open in your car or that the air conditioning is blowing too loud in your house. It's probably the lovely ambient noise here right behind us of the waterfall. 866-34-TRUTH. You've got Jewish questions. We've got Jewish answers. Across from me in this great lobby where we are, where these different booths from different organizations and groups are, just so Dr. James Dobson walked by with his Family Talk booth. And right across from me is Donna Greenberg, who is the woman that God gave the vision to for the Tree of Life Bible, the Messianic Jewish version that I was part of the translation committee and now part of helping to get this out. Literally, I can see her as I'm sitting here with the Messianic Jewish Bible. So I'm going to have Donna come over a little bit later in the broadcast to talk about the Bible and some of the miracles that have happened behind it. But my latest article, Where I Stand on the Blood Moons and the Shemitah, actually second to latest article. My latest article is from Leave It to Beaver to Game of Thrones. What an alien coming to America would learn about America if he based his assumptions on the Emmy Awards, especially if he had been here 50 years earlier. But anyway, the article right before that came out last night is Where I Stand on the Blood Moons and the Shemitah. And someone commented somewhere on social media, said, that's a long way of saying I'm sitting on the fence. Oh, no, no, I'm not sitting on the fence. I am absolutely saying that God could use the phenomenon of the lunar eclipses at this time of the year, that four of them happen in conjunction with the Jewish holidays, the biblical holidays, that four of them happen at that time, and that the last one in this couple-year cycle happens right at the time of the Feast of Tabernacles for Israel to be able to see. Absolutely, God could be getting our attention. God could be stirring hearts. God could be saying, wake up, I'm speaking, wake up, things are happening. I just don't know if that's the case this time. So there are some who've completely dismissed it, saying there's nothing to it. There are others who are saying there's absolutely something to it. I'm saying there well could be something to it, but there's no conclusive, definitive evidence that I have that that's the case. But I love what my friends Aryan Shira Sokaram wrote from Israel. They've been laboring in the land for decades, raised their family there in Israel. They're pillars of the Messianic movement in the land of Israel and really worldwide ambassadors. So I believe Shira wrote this. You're probably aware that the next and final blood moon occurs on September 28th, and this just happens in quotes, to be the evening of the first day of Sukkot, the Feast of Tabernacles. NASA says that this blood moon will also be a full supermoon, appearing 14% larger than normal because of its closer proximity to Earth. We will see it as we sit in our temporary dwellings. In other words, as people are going to be outside, they're going to be sitting in their sukkah, this booth that's built. If you're a traditional Jew, you build it to exact rabbinic specifications. They believe that's the way it's always been done. So you spend a certain amount of your time. You don't sleep there, but you spend a certain amount of time eating there and hanging out there and things like that. So you said, we'll see it as we sit in our temporary dwellings. We are planning to walk up to the top of a hill to watch the supermoon looking down on Bethlehem. So Shira says, what does this signal? We don't know exactly, except the greatest sign of all, that there is a God in heaven who decided to produce a great sign in the heavens on the day he appointed for Israel to celebrate the coming reign of Messiah Yeshua. For those of us who have received salvation, the Lord Yeshua told us, look up, your redemption draws near. So again, when something happens like this, and it seems to be that there's something to it, that it's getting our attention. Look, it's a time of worldwide crisis, is it not? It's a time of the rise of radical Islam in the Middle East in extremely deadly proportions. It's a time of America signing an ill-advised treaty with Iran that will enable them to become a nuclear power and that will get money in their hands with which they can fund terrorism in that region. It is a time of great shaking. So could it be, and you know, the Pope coming to America and speaking, could it be? These are honest questions to ask, all right? So all I'm saying is, let us be alert. Let us not be like the skeptical who say nothing to it can't be. Let us not be like the gullible who say, oh, if there's any kind of sign, it must be, this is it. You know, the earthquake, it's a sign, or the hurricane, it's a sign, blood moon, there's a sign, has to be. And we're always setting dates. And I'm, by the way, I'm not saying those dismissing this because they've prayerfully, studiously considered it. I'm not saying that they are therefore skeptical. Nor am I saying if you sincerely believe this phenomenon is from God that you're being gullible. What I am saying is, for me, the attitude is, could be, could well be, let's look at it and see and evaluate, is God trying to get our attention? 866-34-TRUTH. I do want to talk to you about Yom Kippur. I want to talk to you about the suffering Messiah. I want to share with you a very interesting prayer that many religious Jews, many traditional Jews, pray in the synagogue at this time of the year. Would have been prayed yesterday. So I want to share that with you, a bunch of other things I want to talk to you about. But first, let's go to the phones, 866-34-TRUTH. Bob in Hyattsville, Maryland, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Yes, sir, Dr. Brown. You're talking about exactly what I was calling about. I'm thinking the blood moon, the fourth one's going to be on the 28th or something. And I've heard talk about that. It's the 28th, right?
The 28th, which is the first day of the Feast of Tabernacles, exactly.
In the back of my mind, it's been there. I think I must have heard you talk about it. I've been thinking about that, and nobody's talked about it, and I've been wanting to. And the other thing I was wondering about, I feel like, you know, God bless the Pope and all human beings, but I feel like he's just reading the I don't know what you would call it, just the whole thing about global communism.
Yeah, well, listen, just as far as
all this type of thing.
Yeah, as far as the Pope's visit, read some of the comments. I didn't hear it. And my assumption was going to be that it would be a mix, meaning that he would stand clearly for some issues that would be of importance to us as believers, that there would be other issues where his stand might be different than ours, his position would be different than ours, not so much because of Catholicism, but because of a different ideology. That seems to be the case that's playing out, as best as I can tell. That seems to be the case. I was pleased to see that he made very direct statements in terms of preserving life, and this to Congress, so the first time a sitting pontiff addressing Congress. So that, to me, was very positive. It appears that he indirectly touched on the issue of redefining marriage, same-sex, so-called marriage, that he touched on that and talked about marriage being under threat in different ways. I was pleased to see that he did that. There are other statements, and also standing as he did for religious liberty and freedom, very pleased to see that he did that. There are other statements to the degree that he is perceived as completely anti-capitalist, to the degree that he is throwing himself in on global warming. Those would be very much other issues to me, and ones that I wouldn't see eye to eye with him on. But the fact that our president, sadly, Bob, insulted him by having an openly gay Bishop Gene Robinson there among the people to greet him, a transgender Catholic, and then kind of a Catholic activist that's been opposing the Catholic Church. That was an offensive thing. Governor Mike Huckabee was quite right in saying that it was a wrong thing to do, that it was being like a pretend Christian to do that. Absolutely. So I was glad that the Pope said what he said and stood the way that he stood on some of these issues. Then I see that he visited nuns who were directly affected by some of the president's health care act. So that's all positive. What's the significance of it? I don't know. But is it significant that it's taking place at this time? Is this another thing of God trying to get our attention? Could well be. What we need to say is, okay, then what are you trying to say to us What is the message, God, that you're trying to get across? Hey, thank you, Bob, for the call. By the way, my call screener, our dear Betsy, mentioned that you had called about CERN, C-E-R-N, and the nuclear work going on in that in Europe. I looked into it some and checked with my friends at Reasons to Believe, reasons.org. If you go to reasons.org and type that in, C-E-R-N, reasons.org, and then type in CERN, you'll see a number of articles written, including insights from Hugh Ross, astronomer Hugh Ross, and things like that. So go there for their take on these issues. We will be right back.
Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us on Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. Jesus Yeshua, the King of Majesty, our suffering Messiah, our reigning King. If you've got a Jewish-related question for me, Israel-related question, Hebrew-related question, even some Islam-related questions, 866-34-TRUTH is the number to call as we come your way live from the American Association of Christian Counselors meeting at the Gaylord Opryland Hotel in Nashville, Tennessee. So you hear some ambient noise around me. That is, just trying to get some folks we know to talk a little bit further away from the table. There we go. Ambient noise, we can handle, not that. Okay, I'm sitting here with Danya Greenberg. I want to talk with her in a moment. She is the woman in whose heart God placed the vision for the Tree of Life Bible, and it's a vision that's come to pass in really shocking, amazing ways. So we'll come back to the Blood Moon discussion. If you're on hold, just stay there for a moment. So we'll get your calls as soon as we can. But I just want to get back to the suffering Messiah issue. Your average Jewish person would think, okay, the Messiah comes, he rules and reigns, he sets up his kingdom on the earth, etc. He's not going to suffer, he's not going to die. So this whole idea of Jesus dying on a cross, that's a different God, that's a different religion, that's a different tradition, that has nothing to do with Judaism. Actually, Judaism talks a lot about a suffering Messiah, not a crucified Messiah, but a suffering Messiah. And there's some interpretations in which he's suffering now in heaven for the pains and the sins of the Jewish people, and he somehow bears them in an intercessory role. There's another Jewish tradition that at the end of the age there'll be two messiahs, the Messiah son of Joseph, who will fight the wars of the Lord and then be killed, and then the Messiah son of David will raise him from the dead and finish the work. There are those traditions, but there are many references to the suffering Messiah in some key Jewish chapters in Jewish literature, and there is an additional prayer service. It's called Musaf Yom Kippur. It's an additional service, some additional prayers that are prayed on Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, by some traditional Jews. And just reading from an English translation, an accepted version of a text here. Before he created anything, he established his dwelling, meaning the temple, the lofty armory he established from the beginning before any people or language. He counseled to suffer his divine presence to rest there, so to allow his divine presence to rest there, that those who are maybe guided into the path of rectitude. And it goes on from there, and then it says this, our righteous anointed one, which in Hebrew is Mashiach, is departed from us. Horror hath seized us, and we have none to justify us. He hath borne the yoke of our iniquities and transgressions, and is wounded because of our transgressions. He beareth our sin on his shoulder, that he may find pardon for our iniquities. We shall be healed by his wounds. At that time, the Eternal will create him, the Messiah, as a new creature. Oh, bring him up from the circle of the earth, raise him up from Seir, to assemble us the second time on Mount Lebanon by the hand of Yinon, which is also a messianic title. It's a fascinating tradition. But think of that when eyes open. Think of that when eyes open, and Jewish people who pray that prayer say, our righteous Messiah, That's Yeshua. When instead of seeing him through traditional Christian eyes, or instead of seeing him as the enemy of the faith, or instead of seeing him as some extension of fallen human tradition, instead they recognize him as the promised Messiah, and those texts come alive, there will be a massive awakening among our people. When there is a massive turning of Jewish hearts to the Messiah, please hear me. When we see the great turning that we believe will happen in conjunction with Yeshua's return to this earth, when we see our people in Zechariah 12, he beat to Elias at the Shedrakara, they'll look to me and they've pierced, and the great mourning will take place and national repentance. I don't believe it's going to be outside of Judaism. That it's going to be as, for example, the rabbis all shave their beards, put a cross on, and buy a Christmas tree. I'm not saying you have to have a beard to be authentically Jewish. I'm not saying it's a sin for a Christian to wear a cross, and if you have a Christmas tree, it's between you and God. That's not the issue. I'm saying that right within Judaism, despite man-made traditions, right within people being Jews, one of the Father God of Israel, they're going to discover the Messiah, and what a day that will be. And I expect it from now until the end of the age, we'll continue to see an increase in that happening. All right, sitting with Donnie Greenberg, and we often tell the story of when we first met a few years ago, and Donnie shared the vision with me of this family Bible in a new translation. I thought she's very enthusiastic. She seems like a nice lady. Husband's a messianic rabbi. Yeah, whatever. Yeah, fine. I hope it happens. But it seemed very enthusiastic. But then she started to mention some of the people involved, and I thought, wow, maybe. I'll help if I can, but I didn't know what to make of it. So I've been so thrilled with each step of the way. Don, you're one of the most exciting things now is that a major publisher is going to be putting this Bible out. Who is that?
Yes, Baker Publishing has now agreed to be the publishing partner of the Tree of Life version. And the thing that's so exciting about that is that, like, we're within just 9 months now of the Tree of Life version being sold through Baker Publishing.
Amazing.
It's exciting. And it's available on Kindle right now.
Wow.
Yeah.
Incredible. All right. So it's available. You've got it in U-Bible also?
It's on U-Version.
U-Version.
Yeah, there's been 7 million chapter opens, believe it or not, of our translation in 190 countries. It's been an amazing success.
Just amazing.
Yeah, and so we're on U-Version. We're in pre-order on Logos, we're on eSword, we're in ProPresenter, Easy Worship, Media Shout. We're literally in electronic media, we're just sweeping, and we're going to be on Bible Gateway in a matter of a few months.
And as you know, as we've shared this, when we made, there was an initial Bible that was printed just to get things out, and then the beautiful new family version that we always tout and talk about. But that has been the most in-demand item that we've put out. We've got more orders for that than when I write a new book. I mean, thankfully, I'm not being Donald Trump and comparing one of my books to the Bible. but what I mean is that, you know, people are loving it. What makes this translation so unique?
The translation is unique because it was created by a team of 32 PhD scholars, Messianic Jewish believers in Jesus, and Christians side by side through a 7-step vetting process. And it really restores the Hebraic roots to the sentence structure and therefore the understanding of the scriptures. Some added Hebrew transliterated words on a limited basis, less than 150, words like Shalom and Yeshua and Messiah. Those words help expand our understanding. But the thing that's even more amazing than that is I really think the world is starting to get it, that the calling of the Jewish people all these years has been to carry the Ark of God on their shoulders. Mm. And we're in a generation where we're doing that again as a people.
Incredible. Incredible. And, of course, I've had the privilege of being on the team there.
Yeah.
And seeing the process and watching this unfold. So it's lively. It's clear. It has these Messianic Jewish sensitivities, so these biblical sensitivities. And it's a fine new translation. Real quick, the graphics. There's a story behind this.
The design work in here has been done by Michael Washer. There is a total of 85 pictures in here, Messianic illustrations. When a child looks at the Bible, they recognize Yeshua by the picture that they see.
All right, and it was an unbelievable process for him to do these. Maybe we'll get into that later. You can get the Bible. When you do, we're giving you 3 DVDs from my Think It Through series. It's an incredible offer. Call 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Yes, it is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. Michael Brown, delighted to be with you, coming your way live from the American Association of Christian Counselors in Nashville, Tennessee. We're taking a momentary break from Thoroughly Jewish Thursday because there are a lot of people here at this conference that are just the kind of people that we want to talk to on the Line of Fire broadcast. And even though it's Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, we remain your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. A few weeks back, I was on Trace Embry's radio broadcast, and Trace was on mine. Licensed to Parent with Trace Embry, Insights for Today's Culture. In fact, Trace, I told a friend of mine about the extraordinary program where you pull these troubled kids out and put them in a completely different environment.
Sure.
He said, really? He said, my son's troubled. He wanted to find out more. But Trace, as we interrupt our Early Jewish Thursday here, there's a story that I've been told you're involved with. You give us some background on.
Sure.
The American Psychiatric Association, the American Psychological Association, are prestigious. The first APA, their Diagnostic Statistical Manual, that's like the Bible.
It's the Bible.
Psychiatric profession. Sure. They have really championed the cause of redefining marriage. They have now removed gender identity disorder as a disorder. It's just now gender dysphoria. Some of them want to declassify pedophilia as a disorder and so on, whatever.
It's heading that way.
Okay. But that's not the only story in town.
Right.
You've got this thing, the American Association of Christian Counselors. And tell us what's going on. Maybe a small victory, maybe something to report?
Sure. Yeah, I think it's a large victory, actually. We're members of different secular organizations that have to do with schools and therapeutic programs. And one of those, which I won't tell which one it is, but they wanted to kick us out because last 2 years I've been a voice in the wilderness going to these secular associations and challenging the science, the history, the logic, the statistics, and everything, because this is really more of a political issue than it is scientific.
Yes, sir.
The science is on our side.
Yeah, and just real quick, when people say, yeah, but I heard that the APA, they had a task force, and they were appointed to determine whether counseling for those in struggling with homosexuality, whether it was harmful or not, and they all said it's harmful. Well, first, they didn't say it's all harmful. There was not conclusive evidence. But the fact is the whole panel was either gay activists or...
Exactly. The deck is stacked.
Right, right. It would be like having a PETA, you know, do an analysis of whether it's good to eat meat.
Or the fox guard in the hen house. It's the same thing.
Exactly.
Yeah, so they didn't want us to do reparative therapy, which we don't. All we're giving our kids is the rest of the story and living it, like as Paul Harvey used to say, yep. And living it out before them. They come to their own conclusions, and they read our newsletters.
Yes.
And they know we're Christ-centered, which is really an oddball situation for us to be involved in them in the first place. But they're reading that, you know, the last 2 months we've had four kids renounce that lifestyle, and they're scratching their heads as to how this is happening because they don't think it's even possible.
Yeah.
So, again, back to what I was saying earlier, I'm a voice in the wilderness for these people, standing up in a room of 100, sometimes more, and saying, listen, this is like the emperor's new clothes. You guys are PhD people here. You're program directors. You're the movers and shakers of what's going on here. And you're having people follow you off the cliff into the moral abyss, and they're like lemmings. They don't really know what's going on. You know, so they basically they were going to kick us out. Shepherd's Hill Academy, they were going to kick us out of the association. And we challenged it, and they put us before a conference call on the phone with their entire board, and I gave them all the science and the history and on. So finally, after the conversation, they say, because here's what the criteria was. We had to adhere to the American Psychological Association stance on homosexuality, which is it's a positive and a healthy variation on human sexuality. Well, we couldn't
say that. It's not even neutral. Positive and healthy.
Right.
Yeah.
So first it was just tolerance. Then there was acceptance. And then they said those are insulting. We need to embrace this.
Yeah, embrace and celebrate.
Why don't they embrace my faith in the Lord Jesus Christ?
Right, right.
All right, but that's another story. So I basically just said we can't do it, can't sign off on that.
All right, hang on. We'll be right back. I'm very eager to hear the rest of the story. And listen, lest you underestimate this, it takes courage to do this because your professional status and God's grace. So thank you for standing, Trace. We'll be right back, and then back to Thoroughly Jewish Thursday.
Cleansing flame, send the fire.
The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, live from Nashville, Tennessee at the Gaylord Hotel. Michael Brown, delighted to be with you. Before we get back to the phones, I appreciate your patience and holding. Before we get back to the phones and resume our Thoroughly Jewish Thursday content, I really want to hear the rest of the story from Trace Embry. And Trace, tell us, if folks want to be in touch with you or find out about this extraordinary program, the school that you have, how to reach you.
They can go to helpmytroubledteen.org, helpmytroubledteen.org.
And troubled would mean what?
Anything from your garden variety spoiled brat to Asperger's, ADD, ADHD, all the DDs, which we say is ATD, American Teenager Disorder, basically entitled and pleasured into imbecility. So many of the disorders that pop psychology says is a disorder, when Scripture defines a lot of it as just sin. And we're not against meds or anything like that. Sometimes we'll put a kid on a med. But 70% of the kids that come to Shepherd's Hill and bushelloads of meds are leaving medication free, because we know this is largely a cultural problem. See, you know, some cultures, they love their neighbors, others, they eat them. And if you grow up in a culture where cannibalism is popular, there's a much higher likelihood that your kid's going to morph into that same mentality. Same token, if you raise your kid in a culture that loves their neighbor as themselves, then he's likely going to do that too. There's a zeitgeist going on here, and it's battling with the Holy Spirit that we're trying to raise up our kids in.
Got it. All right, so back to your story. You're now speaking to a group of psychological professionals.
Yeah.
In order for your school to have its official status and be recognized, you have to affirm American Psychological Association's standard, which is that homosexuality is a positive and healthy alternative to heterosexuality,
right?
Not just neutral, but positive, healthy.
Yeah, we could not sign off on that. And after about an hour of grilling to make sure that we did not do reparative therapy, as they, you know, we call it, or coerce our kids, or, you know, shame them, beat them over the head with Jesus. None of that. We do none of that. But after the phone call, I was in another conference up in the Chicago area, and I get a phone call from our office saying, they got a phone call from this organization saying, not only are we not kicked out of the organization, but no program or school or therapeutic entity within the organization, they no longer have to conform to the APA's decision and viewpoint on homosexuality. So it was one voice, and I just got out of a conference with Mike Huckabee over here, where we talked about a Billy Graham conference, where we had everyone lighting lights in the conference, lit the whole place up, and then Billy Graham had them blow them all out, had one on the stage, and he says, everyone in here can see this one light, and it was the one light that helped, you know, everyone have some semblance of illumination in the audience. Well, I was one voice in a sea of secular humanism, basically. And what I want to encourage our audience is, you know what? Get educated on this topic, because the truth, the science is on our side.
Yeah.
And then we can intelligently have an argument or debate and discuss our position from a biblical world. I use no scripture in this argument.
I understand.
They would have discredited me if I did.
Yeah, in A Queer Thing Happened to America, where I challenged that positive and healthy, I said, let's just go through everything, all things being equal.
Right.
In my newest book, Outlasted the Gay Revolution, which we talked about, one of the tenets is that gay activism has within itself the seeds of self-destruction. One thing is that it's become a bullying movement.
Mm-hmm.
The bullying will backfire.
Right.
Another thing is when it's anything goes, once you redefine marriage, you render it meaningless.
Yeah.
That this is part of a culture of sexual anarchy.
Mm-hmm.
The war on gender is unsustainable, because gender distinctions is what makes the world go around.
Yeah.
So it's just looking at things in the natural. Another issue is that many of the foundational pillars are based on lies or exaggerations, you know, the
false
one in ten thing.
Yeah.
Right. So even the idea that the primary reason for homosexual substance abuse, sexually transmitted diseases, depression, suicide, that the primary cause of it is homophobia, that is not a sustainable argument.
Right.
For sure,
right.
There are kids. It's tragic.
Sure.
That, you know, the parents kick them out and they kill themselves, and the church mishandles, and the kids got a sensitive conscience, and they fall into substance abuse. That's tragic.
Yeah.
We do whatever we can to address that. But a major survey in England recently had a gay activist leader say, hey, it's our lifestyle.
Yeah.
We're in the bars more. Uh-huh. We're partying more.
Right.
We're doing this more.
Yeah.
And obviously, if God didn't make men to be with men or women to be with women, no matter how much society affirms it, there's still going to be more problems.
Yeah, and they fail to realize there's something in the brain not snapping. The guys back prior to 1973 in the APA understood this. Of course, they politically got this thing erased. This is a big move by the gay agenda. We've bought into this. The momentum is on their side right now, and a lot of kids that are experimenting in this are doing it because it's no longer is a culturally a shame. I mean, it is like almost trendy.
The appeal, yeah. Have you tried this, especially with bisexual experimentation,
exactly.
Especially with teen girls?
Yeah. And I find it amazing that they'll draw the line at bestiality. It's like they don't want you. Don't you dare compare them with that. But you know what? In another 20 years, that could be just as normal. Maybe 5 years. I don't know.
Yeah, my latest article, three back, but early this week, is called Is Pedophilia Next? And I said, I'm not comparing the acts.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not comparing someone raping a child with two men or two women in a consensual relationship. I'm not comparing that. However, I'm comparing the arguments.
Yes.
I'm born this way. I can't change.
Which is not scientifically sustainable.
Right, exactly, yeah. Exactly. But that's not the argument. That's why, here's my simple way. This is a new argument I came up with recently that really works to refute, is gay the new black?
Yeah.
That I just ask a black person to stand and say, so tell me, when did you come out as black?
Yeah, exactly.
And then when did you first discover you were black?
Yeah.
It's like, okay, we're comparing apples and oranges. So basically, we keep getting the truth out.
Yes. We call it, at Shepherd's Hill Academy, we call it pushing the antithesis. You take their logic, follow it to its logical end,
exactly.
And let it beat themselves over the head with it, because that's what will happen.
Got it. Listen, I'm thrilled to hear this, and obviously the organizations involved, the word's getting out.
Yes.
But ultimately, truth's going to triumph, unless a group completely disqualifies itself. And last question, do you know how many people are part of the AACC, the American Association of Christian Counselors?
You know, Josh McDowell stood in front of a group a couple of years ago, and I think he said he was talking in front of 7,000 people in that auditorium. Now, I'm not sure about that. That would be the number that I would give you if you asked me.
Yeah, I think that's even the number involved with a convention like this, something like that. I'd seen that number. I don't know the total number of counselors. How big are the APAs, their memberships? Do you know?
You know, I wish I could tell you that, Michael. I really don't know.
Because I'm curious to see, with the amount of influence that they wield, how many people are actually involved. Because it may just be a numbers game at a certain point.
Yeah.
Just like chaplaincy.
Mm-hmm.
I think over half of chaplains coming out now are from Liberty University.
Yeah.
At a certain point, you get that the political correct thing has to go.
Well, what's disturbing to me is that, if only 3% of folks are supposed to be this way, then, of course, there's probably less than that.
1.6, according to Centers for Disease Control.
If there was 10%, they have a much smaller number. If churches could just get together, the infrastructure is there, we could wipe these guys out in a heartbeat. But we can't seem to get together. And I think a lot of it is we don't have the knowledge of the subject. This has come on so fast.
Don't have the knowledge. And look, my biblical Hebrew is real good. My spoken Hebrew is not so good. So when an Israeli wants to talk to me, I avoid it a little bit because it's going to miss something.
Yeah.
If someone's got a major counseling need and it's in my in my area of expertise, great.
Sure.
If it's something else, I want to avoid it.
But isn't it amazing how our president, it's kind of a microcosm of how the culture has changed. He comes in against gay marriage, and long before he comes out, he's all for it now. So there is a political component to this that most Christians aren't thinking about. And they have to realize that this has nothing to do with science, has nothing to do with the statistics, because if I got my statistics right, the average homosexual's life expectancy is twice as short as the average smoker. So why would I embrace that lifestyle?
Yeah, and at the very least, no one can dispute. I mean, there have been obituary arguments, and the stats don't work. No one can dispute the fact of sexually transmitted diseases and other issues and the disproportionate number, especially of men having sex with men. How can that be, quote, positive and healthy?
Right.
But look, if we just do the right thing with our marriages, with our families, the way we raise our kids, that's how we win.
Yeah.
And when you say wipe these guys out, you're not talking about exterminating homosexuals.
Oh, no,
you're
talking about
wiping out the false arguments.
Yes.
And restoring moral sanity.
Thank you for clarifying.
Yeah, yeah. instead of celebrating Caitlyn Jenner, we'll be celebrating people that were confused who are now whole.
Yeah. And when I was there before this secular organization, I said, do you realize that you're because they were hailing Bruce Jenner, who has male chromosomes and doesn't want to get rid of his plumbing, okay? All right. As a hero. And I'm like, wait a minute, guys. Do you realize that this guy's on suicide watch as I speak? Because he was at the time. And I said, you're basically wanting America to follow a guy who's got a mental disorder.
Exactly.
You know, and so when they claim that this mental disorder, they get emotionally messed up because of the persecution or what? No, these are people who are vulnerable to begin with. All right. So it's. Maybe some of the persecution puts them over the edge, but there's a problem to begin with.
Right, exactly. And if real love is going to say we're going to help you,
yes.
It's going to be hard,
right?
But we're going to help. That's what you do.
That's how we do it at Shepherd's Hill.
Exactly. What
exactly
you do.
How we just love them to death.
Good news.
Yeah.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
It is nice to get good news, isn't it? It's very nice to get good news. Good news in moral cultural revolution, gospel-based truth. Truth will triumph. Remember, truth will triumph. 866-34-TRUTH. Okay. I am now going back to the Blood Moon discussion that we had at the beginning of the broadcast. Geneva in Boston, thanks for holding so long. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hi, Dr. Brown.
Hello.
Hi, can you hear me?
Loud and clear.
Yes. Hi. Regarding the Blood Moons, I think it's interesting that yesterday was the Hajj, and where all the Islamic people were going for their pilgrimage. Yep. And the Pope was in America, and we're getting ready to have, Yom Kippur was yesterday, and we're getting ready to have the Feast of Tabernacles. And I think it's all interesting. And then when I look back at, in history, when the first blood moon, I guess when they were recording them, was 1493, when Christopher Columbus was helping the Jewish come from the Spanish insurrection, and then again in around 1947 with the Jewish becoming a nation, Israel becoming a nation, and then in 1967 the Six-Day War with Israel regaining Jerusalem. I can't help but thinking that something might be to the blood moons, something might be happening, but I do know.
All right, somehow, whatever you do know, we didn't get to hear, Geneva. We lost you right at the punchline there. Okay, let me just follow through on this. I had an astronomer on, Christian astronomer, looking at the phenomenon of the blood moons and looking at significant dates in modern Israel's history and then other dates that didn't seem significant when the same cycle occurred. And his thing was there's nothing really to it, that it's not precise enough, it's not exact enough. And I absolutely understand his point. We can be sloppy. We can make something out of nothing. We can talk about all this amazing stuff, and nothing's really happening. I absolutely respect that position. I would also say that many times it's not going to be a precise science in terms of the way things come to pass. For example, I'm looking in Amos chapter 1, okay? Amos chapter 1, and it's talking about the words of Amos, from Tekoa and so on, giving the background. And then here's how it dates it. Here's how it dates it. 2 years before the earthquake. And how does verse 2 start? The Lord speaks from Zion. He roars from Jerusalem. So God roars. God speaks. 2 years later, there's an earthquake. That's how it's dated. In other words, this would get the attention. Amos prophesies judgment is coming, all right? And this is the people of Israel. They're not looking at seismic plates shifting or whatever the thing is. They're looking at the fact that there's an earthquake, that God's speaking to them through it. It's very simple to them, okay? So Amos prophesies judgment. He says, the lion has roared, who can but fear? The Lord God has spoken, who can but prophesy? He speaks all these things, and then 2 years later, an earthquake. You don't think that got people's attention? So if simply the signs in the heavens, and I'm not saying decisively either way because I simply don't know, but if the signs in the heavens are designed to get our attention. These are critical times. Look around. These are critical times. A lot is happening. A lot of major things are happening that could impact many, many lives. So, could it be that God's speaking through these? Yes, but we don't date set based on it. We don't do foolish things based on it. What it does is it gets our attention. 866-34-CHURCH. Feel free to differ with me, by the way. I'm not. This is not a hill I'm dying on. Feel free to differ with me. Let's go to Rhode Island. Ken, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Yeah, hi, Dr. Brown. Listen, I just wanted to clear up something. There's a lot of talk about the lunar eclipse taking place on Sukkot.
Yep.
But Sukkot always takes place on a full moon, and lunar eclipses only take place on a full moon. So it's not that much of a coincidence. The same with Pesach. Pesach's always on a full moon because it's the night of the 14th of Nisan. And again, lunar eclipses only take place on the full moon. So you're talking about like this is some sort of grand aligning, a coincidence, or something from God. It's not. It's just the way the normal astronomy works.
Yeah, so here's the question then, which is, of course, an important point, that these particular days start at... one question, though. Hang on. A question about tabernacles always starting the full moon. The first day of the seventh month, right?
7 months, the 14th.
Okay, right. But the first day of the seventh month is Rosh Hashanah in Jewish tradition, but it's the sounding of the shofar in the Bible, right? When does the month start?
Say that again?
When does a month start in the Jewish calendar?
New moon.
New moon. Okay, so if a new moon is on the first of the month, how can you have... So then the full moon is halfway through. So same with 14th of Pesach or the 15th of Tishrei. Okay, the question is how many times do you have four lunar eclipses in a two-year period that all fall during the major high holidays?
That more likely than you think, because I remember in astronomy learning about eclipse seasons, and they tend to be 6 months apart. And Pesach and Sukkot are exactly 6 months apart. One's on the first, the full moon of the first month. The other is the full. The full moon of the seventh month. So that is not a big deal. And then they tend to. 2 years.
All right, yeah, but here, just what I'm looking at. Yeah, hang on. Yeah, listen, you make excellent points, and I very much appreciate it, because probably most of us didn't even think about that. You know what I'm saying, that you're going to have a full moon here and here. But just one report I'm looking at from a year ago, while there have certainly been other sets of four blood moons, only 8 times in the past 2,000 years have all 4 in a series fallen on 2 Jewish holidays consecutively. So that's what gets people's attention.
Once the cycle is there, where the first one is falling on Pesach, then the others are going to just line right up. Sukkot, and then the next one 6 months later will be the next Pesach, and then the next Sukkot.
I understand, but it's only happened 8 times in 2,000 years. So that's pretty uncommon.
So
the fact that it's happened, you know, at 1492, the expulsion of the Jews from Spain, 1947, and it's been some pretty significant times when it's happened. And that's all we're saying. Your point is absolutely well taken, and it's very important to hear it, because, like I said, most of us aren't thinking astronomically, so we're thinking as if it's like a 1 in a trillion billion possibilities. So you've made that clear. But do you think that 8 times in 2,000 years might be significant?
Well, I think it's just normal astronomy.
Got it.
Anyway,
hey,
it's good to talk to you.
Yeah, listen, I really appreciate the call. Thank you. All right, 866-34-TRUTH. I'm going to continue taking calls into the next hour. Friends, on our website, we have thousands of hours of free resources. Every week, I'm writing between 3 and 5 new articles. We're posting 2 or 3 or more new videos every week. Our Line of Fire radio broadcast and our Jewish outreach website, The Real Messiah. Take advantage of these and take advantage of our very special resource offer this week. Go to AskDrBrown.org. AskDrBrown.org. My bottom line, open your eyes, look and ask, are you speaking to us, God? It is the day after Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement. We're about to come into the Feast of Tabernacles. There's going to be the last of the blood moons. Is God trying to speak to us?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome, friends, to this Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. So I'm coming away live from Nashville, Tennessee, the American Association of Christian Counselors. But it is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, so that's where our focus is going to be. Thoroughly Jewish Thursday means if you have a Jewish-related question, if you want to weigh in on the blood moons and Shemitah, either to say it's a lot of bunk or is God speaking through this, we'll take calls on that. We'll take calls. If you can relate the Pope's visit to Israel, we'll take calls on that as well. 866-34-TRUTH. Just looking for a news item that does tie in. Yeah, June 26th. This was not something that was really celebrated in Israel. I'm saying that in an understated way. The Vatican signed a treaty recognizing the state of Palestine. Recognizing Palestine as a state, meaning the so-called occupied territories, West Bank, Palestine under Mahmoud Abbas, recognizing that as a state. And Israel angrily said that hasty step damages the prospects for advancing a peace agreement. By all means, I applaud the Pope for seeking to be a peacemaker. By all means, I applaud the efforts to bring reconciliation between divided groups, absolutely, without question. However, this was a misguided step. This is something that goes outside of the peace process. So, with all respect to the Pope's efforts, wanting to be a peacemaker, not a troublemaker, in many ways, this does more harm than good. That took place back in June. Another interesting news item that I haven't heard. It's next to my colleague Robbie Dilmer. I don't know if you heard this either, but Russia's involved with the war in Syria. Russia supports the Assad regime. And Robbie, I don't know if you heard about this or not, but okay, Russia's in there. Who were the Syrian Christians rooting for? Well, the Syrian Christians fared better under Assad, just like the Iraqi Christians fared better under Saddam Hussein. There was a certain order that he brought to the society, as ruthless as he was. And even though the Russians coming in there, from what I understand, are not thinking about how to help the Syrian Christians, apparently they're smashing ISIS. They're going there aggressively, going after ISIS, which is, from what I'm reading, again, it's all secondhand here. But apparently the Syrian Christians are rooting for the Russians because the Russians are destroying ISIS. Have you heard that reported?
I have.
You have? So what else have you heard?
Well, you know, I did the Arabic Christian Festival.
Okay.
And there's just a fascinating thing going on in the Middle East there with them trying to figure out who's on first and what's on second.
Yes, because, exactly.
You know, there's crisis going on all over the place. And anybody that's providing relief, including Russia, against ISIS, you know, turns out to be the light. So it's a wonderful opportunity for America to jump in there and be the light. But right now, that's not what's going on.
Right. And it is. It's bad guys against bad guys. It really is. And you've got Saudi Arabia funding the Sunnis, and you've got Iran funding the Shiites. And it's bad guys against bad guys. And the Christians are caught in the middle. However, the Christians are more secure under Assad. A dictator just bring a little bit of stability. So I guess the Russians are now good guys to them.
Yeah, it's really a bizarre thing, but it's to me, I see a correlation back to prior to World War, you know, II in China when it was being invaded. You know, the Nazis were, you know, coming to the aid of the Chinese people somewhat too because they had Nazis in there. It was kind of crazy.
Wild, absolutely. Well, I'll share more with that on the other side. So, Robbie, you knew about that. Good man, you got one up on me there. Thank you.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
6-6. Welcome to Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. Michael Brown coming your way live from Nashville. If you hear some ambient noise as hundreds of people walk through at the American Association of Christian Counselors meeting at the Gaylord Hotel in Nashville, Tennessee, I've got a little bit of a waterfall behind me. No, not enough for me to get wet or drenched or anything like that, but you can hear it, just this kind of in the background. It's a very calming effect, actually, almost like a sound machine, but I'm alert. I'm alert, alive, and well. If you have any questions, Hebrew-related questions, I'm still taking questions on the book of Job, as I'm translating the book of Job now to be part of the commentary that I completed on Job. If you've got Jewish-related, Hebrew-related questions, Messianic prophecy-related questions, if you're a Jewish person listening and you differ with me, about my faith in Jesus, I always welcome your calls. Before I go back to the phones, though, I want to discuss one thing with you. This idea of a suffering Messiah. I wrote 5 volumes answering Jewish objections to Jesus. Over 1,500 pages, obviously the work of many, many years of study and research. And one of the things that was most fascinating to me in the studies that I was doing, one of the things that was most fascinating was to see how much Judaism had to say about a suffering Messiah. And on the one hand, Judaism is waiting for a Messiah who'll rule and reign and things like that. That's absolutely true. But there are many Jewish traditions about a suffering Messiah. And some of the most powerful come from a text. It's maybe around the 8th century, something like that. It's called Pesikta Rabbati. It's a series of sermons, homilies from sacred times of the year, Sabbaths and things like that. And this is really, really fascinating in its description of the Messiah's suffering. He's at the throne of God, and he is suffering there. So let me read some of these traditions here. All right, as we are flooded with people around us right now. Okay, how about this? The fathers of the world, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, will in the future rise up in the month of Nisan and will speak to him, namely the Messiah. Ephraim, our true Messiah. Now, why is he called Ephraim? Could it be that this is the Messiah, son of Joseph, not the Messiah, son of David? That's why he's called Ephraim. But either way, he's called our true Messiah. The Messiah in the future will rise up in the month of Nisan and will speak to him. Ephraim, our true Messiah, even though we are your fathers, you are greater than we, for you suffered because of the sins of our children, and cruel punishments have come upon you, the like of which have not come upon the early and the later generations. And you were put to ridicule and held in contempt by the nations of the world because of Israel. So this is in traditional Jewish literature. This is accepted rabbinic literature. This is not some disputed source. Okay, these are homilies, sermon collections from, like I say, about the 8th century of this era. Did I say AD or 8th century of this era? And it's speaking about the sufferings of the Messiah. So here's the Messiah before God's throne, not on the earth, somehow suffering these things spiritually. You were put to ridicule and held in contempt by the nations of the world because of Israel. And you sat in darkness and blackness, and your eyes saw no light, and your skin cleft to your bones, and your body dried out, was like wood, and your eyes grew dim from fasting, and your strength became like a potsherd. All this because of the sins of our children. Do you want that our children should enjoy the happiness that the Holy One, blessed be He, allotted to Israel? Or perhaps because of the great sufferings that have come upon you on their account, because they imprisoned you in the jailhouse, your mind is not reconciled with them. And the Messiah answers them, Fathers of the world, everything I did only for you, and for your children, and for your honor, and for the honor of your children, so that they should enjoy this happiness the Holy One, blessed be He, has allotted to Israel. Then the fathers of the world say to him, Ephraim, our true Messiah, let your mind be at ease, for you put at ease our minds and the mind of your Creator. And it goes on with more passages about the Messiah's suffering. It even quotes from Psalm 22. amazingly enough, it quotes from Psalm 22 about the Messiah's suffering. That's the psalm that begins with, my God, why have you forsaken me? That seems to depict so graphically the Messiah's suffering and dying on a cross. That's even quoted. Psalm 22 is even quoted in these passages. There are rich Jewish traditions about a suffering Messiah. And I firmly believe, friends, that around the world, God will continue to open Jewish eyes. I mean religious Jewish eyes. I mean Jews who are studying Torah and Talmud and rabbinic literature and praying day and night, that their eyes will be open to Jesus Yeshua being the Messiah. And some of these suffering texts will help open their eyes. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Staten Island. Andre, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Wow, I got out. I can't believe I got out holding on so long.
You got
off.
Can
you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you, man. Thanks.
Listen, I'm a 9/11 survivor, okay? And I don't know, I guess God's showing me patience and all kinds of things for holding on this long on the phone, okay? But I'm going to put it once in a nutshell, okay? Everything is speaking to us. Everything. And all we got to do is watch the movies. I did research on it. I spoke to a scientist. The movie 2012, by the way, behind the moon, one asteroid passed the moon behind it, which was 5 miles big, another one 10 miles big, two sun flares passed the Earth, 2012. Yellowstone Park is now losing this every year, about a half an inch of water. The butterflies, everything's disappearing, the deers and everything. Ezekiel 38 in the Bible, we are living in the final last days. I don't know when, only God knows, because he only knows. But all we got to do is look all around us. The full moons, everything is a prophecy. Okay? When that happens, it's a fulfillment, being fulfilled. It's in Matthew 24, it's in Mark 13. Brother, God is real. He is real. And look at the case of Christ. He's speaking to us, okay, to get ready, to unite ourselves. Everything's being fulfilled. Ezekiel 38.
All right, so Andre, let me ask you one question.
Yes, sir.
Obviously, I believe God in many ways is getting our attention.
Yes, sir. I'm a walking miracle myself, survived 9/11. I ran. I saw it happen. And
Where were you when the Twin Towers?
I was shopping around the area. I was off that day. I was shopping around the area. When the first plane hit, I went, oh, my Lord. I ran.
So ever since then, you've lived with a sense of intensity and reality of the evil of this world and how fragile life is, right, in a very intense way. I understand that. Here's my question, sir. Since many times Christians thought they figured it all out, it's all over, so on and so forth, this is the end, and they figured it all out.
It's not
how
fair.
Do
I'm
we avoid making...
Fair.
Oh, okay. So you're not saying that, because it's obvious we can make the same mistakes.
We're very near, because I don't want to assume and sound like doom and gloom, but because he only knows, our high power, our Lord knows, but we are close. We are very close.
Got it.
Sir, I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. Andre, I appreciate you weighing in, and thank God for his mercy and the sobriety with which you live. So you heard Andre's perspective there. If you agree with him, if you have a different perspective, 866-34-TRUTH. Thank you, though, for persevering and getting through. All right, last hour we were talking to Geneva in Boston, and she was just about to give her perspective when suddenly, it doesn't look like an alien invasion. It doesn't look like she was taken by aliens because she's back. Suddenly, excuse me, we lost her. But Geneva... All right, we got you back. You were about to make a point. You're about to give your perspective, and then suddenly you were gone. So glad to see you weren't abducted by aliens or something else or swallowed up by a sinkhole. So welcome back. Yeah, so your perspective was going to be what?
It was answered pretty much by you and what everyone else had said after that. So my other question was for the Shemitah.
Yeah.
Is that how you say it?
Mm-hmm.
Since I am not Jewish... Do the Jewish people of today, do they keep that? Do they do during the year of Shemitah?
The seventh year. Okay, the vast majority of Jews worldwide are not that religious, so they probably don't even know it's the seventh year of the cycle. They're not thinking about it. The only ones really thinking about it are Orthodox Jews living in Israel, because Orthodox Jews living in America it's not really an issue for them because it's not agricultural. So it's Orthodox Jews living in Israel. Some of them literally keep it. They keep it, and they don't work the land, and they pray, and they trust God for extra provision, just as God promised. Others, in keeping with Jewish legal traditions, find ways around it. They sell their property to a Gentile for a dollar, and then they are then hired out to work on it. So it's a circumlocution. It's a way around the law. So they don't really keep it. It's just finding a loophole. But it is recognized by traditional Jews. The seven-year cycle is recognized. But how many keep it the way God prescribed it? A small minority. How many keep it by finding a way around it? That would be the larger majority of religious Jews, as I understand it. Thank you.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to The Line of Fire broadcast. This is Michael Brown. It is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. Just talking a little bit about the suffering Messiah in Jewish tradition. Yesterday, Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, Jews fasting, praying, asking God for forgiveness, and sincerely confessing sin after sin after sin after sin. Traditional Jews do recognize human sin. They don't teach the fall of man the same way Christians would teach it, or all human beings guilty because of Adam's fall. But they do recognize our fallen nature in many ways, and therefore when confessing sin, we'll confess it very deeply, and we'll recognize how guilty we are. Yeah, there can be a self-righteousness, there can be a legalism, of course. You're going to have that when you have a law-based religion. But there is a real recognition of sin. There's a real recognition of our falling short, of our guilt, of our longing for the Messiah, our need for the Messiah in traditional Judaism, and of pleading for mercy from God. Traditional Judaism teaches that within human beings there are two natures, two inclinations, the Yetzer Hara and the Yetzer HaTov, the evil inclination and the good inclination. Some religious Jews, when they pray, they'll wear a belt, not a belt the way you put around your belt through the belt loops of your pants, but a belt you just tie around you. And the purpose of that belt is to divide the upper nature from the lower nature symbolically. So it's up to human beings to conquer the lower nature, but we recognize that we fall short. We recognize our sinfulness, our need for forgiveness. So traditional Jews crying out, traditional Jews praying, traditional Jews asking for mercy. And in the midst of that, there's not a recognition, though, of the need for the blood of the Messiah. Why the Messiah? Why his blood? We need the Messiah to come, but we don't need the Messiah to die. We don't need a man to die for us. That's one of the things we've really tried to open up in my books on answering Jewish objections to Jesus. We've really tried to open this topic up and expose Jewish readers and Christian readers to the idea of the suffering Messiah. Listen to the Zohar. This is Jewish mysticism speaking about the Messiah, son of Joseph. So the Messiah who will die in the last great war before the Messiah, son of David, rules and reigns according to some Jewish traditions. In the hour in which they, the souls of the righteous sufferers, tell the Messiah about the sufferings of Israel in exile and about the sinful among them who seek not the knowledge of their master, the Messiah lifts up his voice and weeps over those sinful among them. This is what is written. He was wounded because of our transgressions. He was crushed because of our iniquities. Isaiah 53, quoted with regard to the sufferings of the Messiah. All right? And now check this out. Rabbi Moshe Alshech was a leading 16th century rabbi, a famous darshan, a preacher. And this is his commentary to Zechariah 12:10. They'll look at me if they've pierced. All right? This is Alshech's commentary on this text. You say you're reading it from a translation. I'm reading it from a translation here, but I own the best edition available of his text, and I've studied it in Hebrew to be sure that this is exactly what it says. So check this out. This is a traditional Jewish text. What would it take for God to open Jewish eyes for them to see that the Messiah is Jesus? What would it take for them to see as they read texts like this and they go back to the scriptures, it's really Jesus. Now, I'm going to read his teaching in a moment. One of the problems is that Jews associate Jesus with Christianity and with breaking away from the law. Jews associate Jesus with being either himself a Torah violator or teaching others to violate the Torah, or the movement that he birthed violated the Torah and changed the Sabbath to Sunday and things like that. So how could he possibly be the Messiah? So when there is a movement, Messianic Jewish movement, Jewish believers recapturing their Jewish roots and saying, hey, the Messiah never told us not to live as Jews. The Messiah never told us not to observe the seventh-day Sabbath. The Messiah never told us not to celebrate the feasts and holy days. He just empowered us to do it in a new way. That could be a bridge of truth back to the real Messiah. So check this out, the commentary of Rabbi Moshe Alshech on Zechariah 12:10. I will yet do a third thing, and that is that they shall look unto me, for they shall lift up their eyes unto me in perfect repentance when they see him whom they pierce, that is Messiah, the son of Joseph. For our rabbis, a blessed memory, have said that he will take upon himself all the guilt of Israel and shall then be slain in the war to make atonement in such matter that it shall be accounted as if Israel had pierced him. For on account of their sin, he has died. And therefore, in order that it may be reckoned to them as a perfect atonement, they will repent and look to the Blessed One, saying that there is none beside him to forgive those that mourn on account of him who died for their sin. This is the meaning of, they shall look upon me. Yeah, it sounds like it's out of a Christian gospel tract, doesn't it? That sounds like it's out of a Messianic Jewish apologetics book. Well, it is. It's in my book, but it's not my writing. It's the writing of a traditional Jewish rabbi, a respected Jewish rabbi whose writings are still studied. Again, he was a preacher more than an exegete, and his writings are still studied and still revered in traditional Judaism. It goes back over 500 years, and he's talking about not just the Messiah dying, but the Messiah dying as an atonement. Because traditional Judaism recognizes the idea that the death of the righteous can have atoning power. Traditional Judaism recognizes the idea that the death of the Messiah can have atoning power. How so? The death of the righteous can have atoning power in traditional Judaism. The concept being this, that people die for their sins, that the wicked will die because of their sins and the righteous will live because of their righteousness. What happens when you have a righteous person dying, say, at the age of 30, a God-fearing, Torah-observing person? Why? What happens when you have a little child, 3-4 years old, basically innocent? That child dies. Why? Traditional Judaism says, well, they were dying for the sins of the generation. In other words, because of their righteousness or their innocence, they could now pay for the sins of others. It would be like, because I had perfect credit, I had $1 million limit on my credit card, And everybody else was misspending and had no credit, and now they're all about to go to jail for fraud and this and that. And I say, hey, I'm going to pay for it all. I've got this line of credit. Well, righteousness would now be somehow this line of credit, so to say. So there is a concept in traditional Judaism. I talk about it a lot in Volume 2 of Answering Jewish Objections to Jesus, as well as in a chapter in the Real Kosher Jesus, that amazingly enough, the death of the righteous as atonement paves the way for us preaching the message of the Messiah Jesus Yeshua, as an atonement for our sins. So this concept of a suffering Messiah is one I believe God will open up in Judaism again to help Jewish people connect with Jesus the Messiah. I believe change will come through that. I believe it's a bridge of truth, of the good news. If you're listening as a Jewish person, the Messiah died on the cross for you. Why? Because you and I were guilty. In the words of Isaiah 53, all of us like sheep went astray, each one turned to his own way, but the Lord laid on him the iniquity of all of us. And when we turn to him, there's forgiveness, there is mercy. Friends, be sure to visit the website, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. When you're there, check out this week's special resource offer. You will be richly blessed when you do.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome, friends, to Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. This is Michael Brown, delighted to be with you, coming your way live from the American Association of Christian Counselors. There are thousands that are here, and I'm sitting. You have to tell me how to pronounce your last name, Robert.
It's a crazy last name. It's pronounced Shirok.
Shirok.
Not looks as like, bad as it looks.
Looks like Shryok, which is why I asked you. Robert Shirok from San Juan Capistrano. That's where Hank Hanegraaff used to be based.
No kidding.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't realize that.
I remember hearing that on the radio. Now he's not far from me and right outside of Charlotte, North Carolina. We're kind of neighbors, but that's how I knew the name. I used to hear that. All right, so we're taking a break from Thoroughly Jewish Thursday for a moment, unless you want to answer Hebrew questions for us, Robert.
I'm going to stick with what I know best.
Okay. Tell us who you are and why you're at this conference.
I'm with a program called Covenant Hills Treatment Center. We provide drug and alcohol recovery, primary treatment for those that are struggling with addiction and alcoholism.
And I guess you're busy.
We do stay busy. We've been around for 23 years in Orange County, Southern California. We have a men's campus and a women's campus, and then we also have a women's campus in Central Texas.
All right. Excuse me. I spoke with some folks yesterday, some counselors, some sexual addiction counselors, some that deal with drug and alcohol rehab. Is there something similar to all addictions?
There is. There absolutely is. In fact, it breaks my heart because you and I know, I truly believe most everybody at this conference knows that the sex addiction and alcoholism are flip sides of the same coin. It's a heart issue. My heart is an idol factory, and it can make an idol out of sex, alcohol, prescription pills, your approval, my bank account, the appearance of my kids, the appearance of my message. I can make an idol out of anything.
Mm.
And so our goal is to love these men and women that are struggling with addiction. We want to love them outside of themselves. We love this message that says, you know what, God's not our concern right now, you are. We'll get to him when you're ready. We are not here to fix you, we are here to love you. And we want to know you and hope you'll be willing to know us, because you know what, we don't have it all together ourselves. We're struggling in our own marriages, in our own finances, in our own purity, in our own devotion. And God uses those struggles to draw us closer to himself. So we want to see you set free from your struggle and come join us in ours.
Mm. And do you see people, you've been at this now over 20 years, lasting change?
We do. It really is this celebration of, it is about progress, not perfection. But we see a lot of long-term change.
I was shooting heroin as a teenager and,
wow,
and wonderfully set free and transformed. But I was doing drugs heavily for a couple of years, and then God set me free, and I've been free. I know some people struggle decades with things, and you kind of lose hope. This becomes who you are. But you are saying there really is liberty in the Messiah.
There is. There absolutely is. I mean, I love that language that says long-term recovery. I do. You know, I struggle with, I mean, we celebrate AA. I think they've done wonderful things for hurting people. The 12 steps, they really do drip biblical devotion. But at the end of the day, when I find somebody that's been cycled through that chronic relapsing, resistant to every treatment program they go through, my question is, you know, one of the big things in AA is to get a sponsor. And that's somebody that's in recovery themselves that walks you through the steps of recovery. But if you stop at getting a sponsor and don't become a sponsor, man, you're setting yourself up for relapse. That's the key, is to get involved in other people's recovery, become a light and become a source of accountability.
Right. So even the concept of follower of Jesus, disciples make disciples.
That's it.
And
that's
as
exactly
you keep
it.
Reaching out, making new disciples, the
that's
life
right.
flow is there. Do you have folks coming from different parts of the country, or is it just
all
local?
Over. No, all over the U.S.
And how many do you have on campus at any one time?
So we have 50 beds between the three campuses. And I'll tell you, our company started with a couple of Christ-following men that got the phone number 1-800-NO-ABUSE, created a nonprofit ministry, and just ran with it from there.
All right. Is that the number they can still call?
Yes, sir. 1-800-NO-ABUSE.
1-800-NO-ABUSE. There's somebody listening that's struggling, and this could be God's message to you. Thanks so much, Rob.
Oh, such a blessing. Thank you.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. It is your Thoroughly Jewish host, Michael Brown. If you've got a Jewish-related question, Hebrew-related question, issues that pertain to what the Bible says in terms of how we live, 866-34-TRUTH. Coming your way live from the American Association of Christian Counselors in Nashville, Tennessee. And there's a lovely little waterfall right behind me that you might hear. You might hear that in the background. So it's just some lovely ambient noise. According to Sheikh Raed Salah, if Israel's violations continue, so always the Palestinians and the Muslim world accusing Israel of violations, if Israel's violations continue, a third Palestinian intifada will break out in the West Bank and Jerusalem. I don't know if you are aware of how many terrorist attacks, violent attacks occur or are attempted on a daily basis in Israel. The vast majority thwarted. But we talked about it either last week or the week before. Hundreds and hundreds of attacks, actual attacks so far, that in the year, and BBC reported like three of them out of, you know, 700 or 800. And then when it came to attacks on Palestinians by Israelis, if there were four of them, all four of them were reported. Mahmoud Abbas is warning about this because of Israel's alleged violations entering the sacred temple or entering the sacred mosque. Look, Palestinians, from what we know, were stockpiling weapons, rocks and things with which to assault Jews praying at the Kotel, at the Wailing Wall, during these high holy days on the biblical calendar. Israel goes in, no choice but to go in to protect their people. So, of course, they get blamed for it. And Abbas is saying, hey, there's an intifada coming. We don't want it to happen, but it's going to come. There's going to be another uprising, and of course it could be violent and dangerous. So just keep praying for God's best for everyone involved, God's best for everyone involved in Israel right now. I'm delighted to be sitting again with Danya Greenberg face-to-face. Danya also has a booth here with the Messianic Jewish Family Bible, the Tree of Life version, and we're among thousands of people at this counselor's convention. Before I go back to the phones, Danya, what brought you here? I know you're making this Bible known wherever you can. It's the great burden and vision God's given you, the new Tree of Life version. But I was surprised. I'm surprised to be here personally in conjunction with our radio broadcast, doing some live shows and interacting with some of these Christian counselors. But what brought you here, and what kind of responses are you getting?
It's actually amazing to be here. There's such a love of seeing people healed. And the Messianic Jewish Family Bible Society is birthed out of a desire to get families around the Bible. We believe that if the Bible is the center of the home, that families can find restoration and healing, and from there build great communities. We're missing the family piece.
Got it. So are people resonating with that?
Oh, absolutely. I'm actually shocked at how many people are stopping by the booth because they see the word Messianic Jewish Family Bible in one line. I think that's a little shocking.
Got it. Now, we had a gathering recently with some of the key translators and theologians and leaders involved with the project. And to me, the highlight was when we did family worship. Now, we did worship, I don't know, 30, 40 people that were there just sitting around in the circle. But you did it the way you do it at your home, and your family led the worship. That's what you've done at home. We did it together. And there was a real presence of the Spirit there. What is it about having a family Bible or this concept? What about this particular Bible makes it so suitable for families?
We believe that God's presence is when we worship Him together. And having a family Bible as a focal point, restoring the family altar to the home, is the purpose of this Bible. So, of course, we want all the different members of the family to be reading the Bible, and people read different translations, but to have a focal point in your family, a place to gather like Jewish people do on Friday nights, our family learned how to worship at home around the Bible together, and we just wanted to share that with the world, because I don't know that that's an easy thing to teach people. It's more like you have to model it for them.
Right, absolutely. And families just sitting having a meal together is one thing. Having a meal together and talking about spiritual things is another thing. gathering around the word used to happen a whole lot more than it does in our fractured, fragmented society. All right. I asked you in the last hour about the graphics, met the actual artist involved. So
yes.
There are 80-something drawings in the – how many?
Right now in the Messianic Jewish Family Bible, there are 83 drawings.
83.
There's two more. He did one for the Ascension and one for the Crucifixion that he did that we also debuted at that conference. But there's going to be a total of 100 eventually. We have got the biggest collection of art that's been created and sponsored by a Bible translation in a very, very, very long time. And that alone makes this Bible really unique.
All right, and the artists are really agonized over this. I mean, the way it was described, there's a whole lot of effort and prayer. What was he trying to capture?
What we were trying to capture, I went and found Michael Washer on the internet when I saw a picture that he first drew in John 1 of the Word became flesh. And that picture so inspired me that 10 years later I went looking for him on the internet and I asked him, would you do pictures for our Bible? So for the past 7 years, we've been collaborating on what pieces of art will cause people to open up the Bible and see Yeshua as a Jew. And that includes everything from his birth to his mikvah when he was immersed by John. It also includes everything from the last trumpet in Revelation all the way back to the creation story. So when you see Messianic Jewish art, through it just restores the meta narrative to a Jewish story.
Yeah, and so these are spaced throughout the Bible. And one of the things I love most, you know, the embedded Hebrew in the back cover, you know, from Proverbs, the third chapter, the tree of life, is, you know, just some wonderful stuff. What responses are you getting from not just Messianic Jewish readers? But are others, or pastors, other leaders, or are others endorsing this? The great news that Baker Books is now picking this up as a Bible that they will publish and distribute. So they are as respected as it comes in the Christian publishing industry.
Amen.
That's big. I was so thrilled when you called me with that Amen. With that news. It was confidential originally. Now we can share it. But what are you hearing from others about the translation?
I think the thing people are most fascinated with is that while we very much want to understand the Hebraic lens of the Bible, what people are also looking for is a restoration of God's family tree. That it's not just about the message coming from the Jews, but it's a message that encompasses the whole world. And that we're really grafting, we're creating a place for the grafted and the chosen to abide together in God's family tree. So the response from Christians has been amazing because they want to understand the Jewish book order. They want to know why the Jewish book order ends with Second Chronicles instead of Malachi. Fascinating.
Yeah.
They're fascinated at the idea that a non-Jewish king would say, come, you know, build your house and let us go up to the house of the Lord, as opposed to the very sad ending in the end of Malachi. The page that you turn to the new covenant, to the good news of Yeshua, is a happy story. A happy ending to a happy story is that Messiah did come and rise from the dead, and then everyone is invited into God's kingdom.
Neat. Wonderful. So friends, listen, this is a $70 Bible. It's beautifully produced. It's worth every dime. You'll see when you hold it, when you go through it, it's a tremendous new translation. I had the joy of being on the team that helped to produce it, team of PhDs that helped to produce it. But when you get it from us, not only are we paying the postage, we're giving you three free DVDs. I pushed for this. I said, let's just overdo it. Three free DVDs. My testimony from LSD to PhD. This is on the Think It Through TV show that we did. And then The Hidden Secrets of the Kabbalah. That's an interesting one. And then Jewish Revolutionaries. You get those free when you order. So call 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. Or go to our website, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. You can order there. Hey, Danya, keep up the great work. Great as always to see you.
God bless you.
All right, 866-34-TRUTH. I want to go to my friend and colleague, Scott Volk. Here I am in Nashville. You're in Charlotte, North Carolina. Welcome to the Line of Fire, which you yourself have hosted for me.
I always love hosting for you. But I'm in my car driving, and I just flipped the radio on, hearing you talking about how the Jewish people are being blamed for a lot of what's going on with regard to the Palestinians. And I wanted to make a comment, bro. You wouldn't believe it. I just got off the phone with a nationally known leader. I won't give his name because everybody would recognize it. But just on the phone with him, He said he visited Bethlehem and referred to the security wall, which, by the way, is mostly a fence, but he referred to it as the Berlin Wall of Israel, saying that his Palestinian friends are suffering because Israel has built this wall. And no matter how hard we as believers try to post the picture that Israel put that up there because they were protecting themselves, he nonetheless said, but so many Palestinians are suffering. So, on this thoroughly Jewish Thursday, I've got a question for you. How can we be articulating to the church that the purpose of this wall, number one, is not to stifle the Palestinian economy, but to rather protect
To keep the murderers out. We shouted for the... Scott, you got to text me. Who are you talking to?
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, how do we get the world, how do we get the church, how do we get the church to understand what is going on? We shout it from the rooftops. Israel put up a security fence, which is 3% wall, roughly, 97% fence. They put it up to keep murderers out. The reason for the wall is because in those areas, snipers had access to Israelis and were killing Israelis, murdering Israelis in cold blood. So the wall was put up to keep snipers out. There would have been no reason to put a fence up or a wall up had the Palestinian Authority done what it needed to do to fight terrorism rather than inciting terrorism. The reason there is a wall and primarily a fence causing any hardship for Palestinians is because of Palestinian murderers and terrorists slaughtering Israeli men, women, and children in cold blood. And since the fence and wall were put up, the security barrier, the homicides have dropped by what? 99 out of 100? Or some figure like that? In other words, it worked. So if Mexico was inciting terrorists coming to America, on the national TV programming was promoting Israel hatred, okay? This is actually taking place, and Mexico is not trying to stop them. And after we do what we can, we end up saying, okay, right now they're shooting at our children in the schools. Right now they're coming across our borders and killing mothers in their beds. They're doing that. So we are going to put a wall up. Well, that wall is going to bring economic hardship to Mexico. That's Mexico's problem. I mean, obviously, a little of this is too close to home with some of the bad things that have happened. But you hear what I'm saying. I'm looking at stats right here. IDF blog of Palestinian attacks that terrorized Israel in the last year. And what a scene. I'm looking at the Har Nof massacre. November of last year, where Jewish men praying in the synagogue were butchered. I mean, this is one of the most horrific scenes you could imagine. So in the past 12 months, the lives of thousands of Israelis have been threatened by Palestinian terror. Driving your car, taking the bus, or simply walking around, daily routine has become dangerous to Israelis. Here's a recap of all the main terrorist attacks against Israelis in the last year. And I'm looking at one after another. After another, bloody scenes, horrific scenes. December 25th, a Molotov cocktail was thrown in the car by Palestinians near the Maale Shomron community in the Samaria region, leaving an 11-year-old girl to suffer third-degree wounds to over 50% of her body. Here's the car on fire. Palestinian terrorists injured 12 people in a stabbing attack on a bus in Tel Aviv this January 21st. February 22nd, 18-year-old Palestinian stabbed a 27-year-old Israeli civilian in Jerusalem, on and on and on and on through the year. This is despite the security barrier. Without the security barrier, it would be much, 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 much worse. So what is the issue? The issue is Palestinians need to stop Palestinian terror. If they stop Palestinian terror, the wall, the fence won't be there. You think Israelis like the fence there? Do you think Israelis like the wall there? You think Israelis are saying, great, let these people, especially the Christians in Bethlehem, suffer? For the Christians to point a finger at Israel rather than pointing the finger at radical Islam, that no matter what their suffering is, and we stand with Palestinian Christians, we stand with them as fellow believers, we stand with them. Those who truly know the Lord, we absolutely stand with them. And those who suffer because they're Christians, we stand with them. But there's no denying that the situation for Christians in Bethlehem was far better before PLO, PA rule. That it was better when Israelis had control and authority. To the extent that the PLO or the PA has rule, you're still talking about Islam and in some cases radical Islam. I was asked a couple of years ago, would I consider speaking at a Christ at the Checkpoint conference in Bethlehem? These have been considered anti-Semitic and dangerous by some. I know the organizers would say that's not their goal, but some have really taken issue. I was asked, would I consider speaking at it? I'm known as a critic of much of it. Would I consider speaking at it and talking about church and Jewish history? In other words, let these people know about the suffering of the Jewish people through history, because many of them just look at the Jews as the evil ones, the occupiers, the bad guys, and they don't understand Jewish history. They don't understand the suffering. They don't understand the persecution. They don't understand that. And because of that, they're not going to be sympathetic to Israel. They're not going to be sympathetic to Israel having a homeland after what the Nazis did and so on, and even the connection of that to so-called Christian Europe. Would I speak on that? Well, that'd be great to speak on, but I proposed, how about if I speak on radical Islam, the elephant in the room? Oh, you can't. I'm still open to speak on both. Speak on both. How's that? All right, let's go to Doug in Winston-Salem. We're short on time, but go for it, dear sir.
Hey, sir, I was listening to Dr. Sproul, and he was talking about the oracular voice. He was actually talking on Isaiah 6. But he mentioned about the oracular voice, and he talked about, you know, oracle of weal and oracle of woe. And, you know, woe I understand. I was just wondering if you could lay out for me what's the oracle of weal and where the origin of the word weal comes from.
Yeah, weal and woe, I mean, they're very similar words, actually. So first, oracular, that just means prophetic, right?
Yes.
All that means is prophetic. It's not that you have, I mean, sometimes you have a different oracle. There's something called kinah, which is lamentation, which has a different Hebrew meter, almost feels kind of like a limping, mournful meter. You have that, but otherwise you just have different prophetic words. And I don't know if the prophets put them in all these different categories. You know, this is an oracle of woe, or this is an oracle of weal, or something like that. But weal is just, it's wounds and blows. It's just another word for suffering. I'm just looking if I can get an origin on the opposite. Sorry. So weal and woe. So shalom versus suffering. It's in the opposite of what I should be saying. Just an oracle of blessing, an oracle of well being, and I guess weal comes maybe from well being. Could well be the origin there. So there's the physical weal that can be bruise on the flesh. There is the positive, I can't believe I was saying the negative, the positive messages of shalom. So the prophets brought messages both of peace, well-being, so weal, and woe. So there's nothing much to it, nothing. It sounds, the oracular voice of weal, it sounds like R.C. Sproul, and that, you know, that classic theological deep voice. It's just prophecies of good and prophecies of bad is what it comes down to. And the prophets brought moats. But what's interesting, according to the guidelines of Jeremiah 27 and 28, any prophet who tells you shalom, everything's going to be good, you only know he's a true prophet when it happens, because Israel's always so bad. You only know he's a true prophet when it happens. But if they say bad things, they're probably right. But either way, it has to be proven out. But that's all there is to it. So thanks. So I'm assuming we'll related to well, as in well-being. All right, friends, out of time, make sure you check out our resource offering resources on the website, askdrbrown.org. My bottom line today, pray with me and believe with me for the eyes of the Jewish people to be opened to the suffering Messiah being none other than Jesus, Yeshua.